Major support for Louisiana Eats on WWNO provided by Zatarain's, proud producers of authentic New Orleans-style cuisine. Zatarain's, a New Orleans tradition since 1889.
From WWNO New Orleans, this is Louisiana Eats. I'm Poppy Tooker. As we prepare to ring in a new year, we're taking a look back at some of our favorite special guests from 2012. On January 6th, culinary icon Leah Chase of Dookie Chase Restaurant will celebrate her 90th birthday. This year, Leah generously allowed us to share her big day, and we rode along for a special tribute at Gallia Hall. It was a big year for artist Terrence Osborne, and we got to visit with him in his West Bank studio. Then, Food Network's Big Daddy stopped by for a visit and brought along a very inspirational message. It's been a very good year, so let's sit back and enjoy some favorite 2012 Louisiana Eats moments. On Friday, January 6th, New Orleans culinary icon Leah Chase of Dookie Chase Restaurant turned 89 years old. Mayor Mitch Landrieu opened the carnival season that morning at Gallier Hall, and Mrs. Chase's presence was specially requested. We were lucky enough to go along with Leah for the ride that began literally at her kitchen door and then carried us through the bumpy streets of New Orleans. So you've been in the kitchen since what time this morning?
6:30.
Mm-hmm. And so you made the okra gumbo, because you do that every Friday?
Every Friday. I do okra gumbo every Friday. I do lima beans and shrimp every Friday. So today I had to go and make the spaghetti for the meatballs. I did that. I put the eggplant. I'm making eggplant for C, so I did the eggplant. So I was rolling this morning, girl. I don't know where I got the energy from or where the knees worked good this morning.
And now the mayor's going to interrupt you. You're on a roll. He's calling you out the kitchen, huh?
Calling me out the kitchen, but that's okay.
Have you ever been to this kickoff to carnival at Gallia?
No, never, never. Mm-mm. The last mayor that I was really close with was Dutch, you know.
So, Leah, tell me, which birthday is this?
89.
89 years old.
Isn't that a tripping I have? 89. And my sisters all called me this morning, and they say, oh, Leah, we so blessed, and we are, because there's 11 of us, and we all living.
That's incredible.
Yeah. One, I'm 89. The one under me is 87. No, she's going to be 88 coming up, because she's just 18 months younger than me. Then Eleanor's birthday, my sister's birthday, is tomorrow. She's the one that's going to be 86.
Mm-hmm. She's just a youngster.
She's a youngster. And we have Sylvia that's down the line from Grace.
Yes.
And Sylvia's already 80. And got mad because she had to retire from the school system.
At 80?
At 80. Well, I know I can work as much as the other ones can work. I don't know why I have to retire at 80. Well, you're 80, girl, whether you like it or not. But it is good to be living, and it's just good to be living.
So tell me, Leah, what are you looking forward to in the 89th year?
A good year in the restaurant. A good year in the city. I'm looking for us to have a good year, and I'm going to work like the Dickens to get people up and going. Poppy, if we just got everybody up and moving and doing something, everybody can't do the same thing, but everybody put their little part in and do what they have to do, we will have a magnificent city. And for me, I feel like I have a special job, because so many black people are not, you know, moving like they should be, or maybe like they could be. And that's my job, to try to get them. Come on, do whatever you can do. Something. Everybody can do something. Come on. Pick up your pants and go to work.
Now let me ask you this. You've got some really big things happening this spring in connection with the art world, right?
Well, that's part of my 89th birthday, but by that time I'll be 3 months into my 90th year, so they can pretend I'm 90 already. So we have this big thing at the museum, and it's all paintings of me in the kitchen of all the places. It's paintings of me working and doing things in the kitchen. So,
who did the paintings? Who's the artist?
Gus Blosch, a young man named Gus Blosch.
Mm-hmm. And how did he get so lucky to come in the kitchen with his paintbrushes?
That's not the lucky part, I think, because everybody comes in my kitchen. So you can come with a paintbrush, you can come with a broom, you can come with anything you want in my kitchen. I don't care. It's my daughters that don't want them. Mother, you got to keep those people out the kitchen now, because some of them, they're going to get burned or they're going to get scalded. You got to play safe and keep them out the kitchen. Oh, come on in the kitchen. You're not going to get anything. But he comes in the kitchen, and he does this whole, Poppy, I look like heck. I do. My rear end look like it's about 5 feet wide. But I don't care. It's me. I say he painted me, even though he could have made me look like Halle Berry or somebody. But he just made me look like me there.
That's what happens when your home is in the kitchen. Sometimes they get your picture the way that maybe you wouldn't want.
I said, you didn't make me look good, but that's okay. You got me, so whatever. That's me. That's how I am. I can't change that.
Well,
so
that's going to be a fantastic tribute
it's
to
gonna
you.
Be, and what I wanted to do is raise a little money for the museum and get more people involved in the museum, Poppy. We have to get more people involved in the arts, because I think that's so important. Art's going to calm you down. They're going to make you feel good. So we need to get more people involved. And if that little show can get people involved, I'm happy. So I had a good life. It's a long way from the strawberry patch. A long way, but it's good.
Arriving at Gallier Hall, dignitaries from Rex and Zulu were assembling for a second line through the stately hall. We were seated on the front row with Cheryl Landry, the city's first lady, between us, and here is what the mayor had to say.
I have a young lady here who I'm in love with. It's not my wife. Let me say that over. I have another young lady here that I'm in love with, as well as my wife. She watches over me, and anybody who knows her knows that what I'm about to tell you is true. If you get out of line, she's going to smack you around a little bit. She did this to President Obama, who happened to grace her presence at his restaurant, you would think. But the young man had the audacity to put Tabasco in her gumbo, and she let him know it. Is that true? If I'm lying, I'm dying. She said, Mr. President, people don't put Tabasco in their gumbo in my shop. And then she let him do it, because, of course, he was a leader of the free world. But this young lady is having her birthday today. 89th birthday, and we have flowers for Miss Leah Chase. All right, so before y'all sit down, here we go. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, Miss Leah. Happy birthday to you. I think it's fair to say that we would really not be here were it not for Leah Chase and her family, and the city of New Orleans would not be what it is. Dookie Chase's was the place that opened up its doors in the deepest part of the South during our most difficult times, so that people could have communion and find a way to seek and to grab common ground. And Miss Chase has steadied our faces when they needed to be steadied, as only a great mother can. And a leader and a person that had great courage under very difficult circumstances. So, Leah, from the bottom of my heart and the bottom of the heart of the people of the city of New Orleans, thank you for everything that you have done for us, and God bless you. Thank you.
The festivities continued with the unveiling of the Rex Proclamation and the Zulu poster, concluding with the cutting of the king cake. Then it was back into the car, because Leah had to get back into her kitchen. So did you have any idea it would be that spectacular?
I had no idea they were going to do this. For one thing, I had no idea. I thought I would just go help the man open the thing up. But it was really a pretty ceremony. And I love those posters. That's the most beautiful Zulu poster I have ever seen.
It is beautiful.
It is.
And how nice, done by a woman.
Mm-hmm.
So, Leah, what's the rest of your day going to bring now?
Back in the kitchen working. I'm going to work right now because we had 50 people in one room for luncheon and, 12 in another room and then the regular customers. And then if I'm open tonight, I got to get those dinners out like I want them to get.
Is that what you're going to do for your birthday? Is open on Friday night for dinner?
Uh-huh. And that's a good birthday for me.
Well, you know, Leah Chase, I have a feeling that your 89th year is going to be the best one of all.
I think so, too. I think it's just going to be great. I really do.
It couldn't be off to a better start.
It couldn't be off to a better start is right. A great start.
Leah Chase on her 89th birthday.
I went to Duke and Chase to get something to eat. The waitress looked at me and said, Ray, you sure look me now. Early in the morning.
Early in the morning.
I told him it was early in the morning.
Early in the morning.
Yeah, early in the morning. Yeah. I ain't got nothing but the blues.
Louisiana Kitchen editor Jill Benson makes it her business to be the first to uncover what's new in Louisiana Eats. Jill's our roving reporter, here to service some of the freshest food news anywhere. Jill, where have you been, and what did you eat there?
Poppy, I've been hanging out on Barksdale Boulevard in Bossier City.
Really?
Yes, really. There's a whole lot going on around Barksdale Air Force Base. People of many different ethnicities have moved in. And to support their culinary interests, a collection of restaurants have sprung up within a two-mile radius. There's Lemongrass serving Cambodian food. There's Don's Garden serving just straight-up Vietnamese food. And there's Mariscos La Jaibita serving up Veracruzian food.
Veracruzian food? What is that?
The food of Veracruz. I made the word up, Poppy.
Lots of seafood?
Lots of seafood. Screamingly fresh seafood, accented with a lot of fresh herbs. And there's a cocktail there that Christopher J., one of our magazine reporters, turned me on to. It's just a straight-up beer, but it's heavily laced with loads of hot sauce and Worcestershire sauce, lots of black pepper, some lemon and lime juice. And he said, I dare you to choke this thing down and you'll curse it all the way. And then 5 minutes from now, you'll be craving another one. And he was right.
Well, if you want to order one, what do you ask for?
You ask for the Michelada.
So what else is happening on Barksdale Boulevard?
Well, about a mile away at Lemongrass, they're serving up Cambodian cuisine. There's a Nam Pen. It's probably the most popular dish there. It's pretty much like a straight-up Vietnamese pho, only with an all-seafood influence. One dish that really stood out for me was the mango cobbler. It's a dessert. It's a mango cobbler, and that's served with Palestinian honey mangoes. There's an interesting pastry program going on there as well, and there are many unexpected flavors happening.
And then what's next?
Then there's Don's Garden. That is more traditional Vietnamese food. You know, banh mi sandwiches that are slathered with pork liver pate and piled up with roasted pork belly, Vietnamese sausage, cilantro, pickled daikon relish, jalapenos, all come together to make another version of their banh mi. They have a variety of pho.
So is that really a deli?
That is one of two of Don's Garden restaurants. One of them is in Bossier. The other one is nearby in Shreveport. So it's a seated restaurant. It also kind of serves as a deli. It's a pretty flexible setup happening there over at Don's Garden in Bossier.
And I guess you have quite a diverse clientele dining at these places, huh?
Absolutely. There are people of, obviously, the ethnicities to which the food is addressing. And then more in the know or adventurous eaters in the Bossier area.
And lots of handsome men in military uniforms.
Absolutely. It's the military men you seek. Bossier City is the place to be.
Well, thanks, Jill. Will you come back and tell us what's next on the agenda soon.
Thanks, Poppy. I'll be roving along.
Louisiana Eats roving reporter, Jill Benson. When we come back from a short break, we'll visit a revolutionary rooftop farm. Then travel across the Mississippi River for a visit with artist Terrence Osborne in his own home studio. Stay tuned. I'm Poppy Tooker, and you're listening to Louisiana Eats, edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Louisiana Eats is brought to you with major support from Popeye's Louisiana Kitchen and Zatarain's. The rooftop garden at the downtown New Orleans Rouse's Market has been one of the best-kept secrets in town. Even many of the store employees had no idea what was going on. But Rouse's culinary director, Jack Truding, is going to let us in on the secret. Jack, thank you for inviting us to your secret garden up here.
Thanks for sharing in the excitement with me. We think we've got one of the coolest things in the city. We're very proud to have this sort of project with grassroots here in New Orleans.
Well, the view is absolutely gorgeous. I mean, we're here on this beautiful, bright, sunny morning, but the bridge in the background, all the downtown roofs, it's fabulous here. It must be gorgeous at night.
It is. Actually, we're hoping to host some cocktail parties and maybe some movie nights up here. And the pretty thing that some people won't see is the butterflies and the bees that have naturally found their way four stories up to this garden.
Well, I have never seen a growing system like this. Tell me about where it came from and explain to me what's going on here.
This was an idea that we found maybe 6 months ago, so it's a quick project for us. It's a vertical aeroponic system, and what that means is the produce is growing up and there is no soil, and it's using only a tenth of the water that soil plants would use. The plants grow twice as fast, maybe a little bit more than that. But we had an idea that we should have a sustainable program with the local movement and the fact that people want to know where their food's coming from. This was the perfect idea and a perfect spot to launch a rooftop garden or farm even.
Well, I've heard of hydroponics before, but aeroponics is a word that I'm not familiar with. So this is actually combining those two things, right?
It is. You're right. Hydroponics uses water as a medium, and the roots would grow right into water and sit in water. With aeroponics, the roots are actually suspended in air. You'll see that these are actually growing 2 to 3 feet in length. Plants will only use the water that they need. So the beautiful thing about this is that this water is reclaimed in the bottom and then comes right back up and comes right back to the plant. So it's very, very sustainable.
And there's no soil used at all.
No soil.
So where are the plants getting their nutrients from?
We use two large 50-gallon tanks of a couple of different types of nutrients that we funnel together and we monitor on a daily basis to make sure the pH level is good and the nutrients are good. The food will then come from those tanks into these towers, and the aeroponic system is the water and the nutrients and air. There's a disperser in the middle of this tower that actually disperses almost shattered water, and the roots will hold on to the nutrients and let go of the water that they don't need, and then the cycle starts all over again about every 15 minutes.
So is this considered organic?
I'd consider this better than organic, actually. It's as clean as it's going to get. Even organic farmers in the soil need to put additives. We're not using that. We're using an integrated pest management system. And what that means basically is we're not putting any residual pesticides. We're putting ladybugs on. We're putting praying mantises on. And if we see a worm or something like that, well, then we just flick it off and let the birds get it.
So what's growing up here?
Well, today we've got Genovese basil. We've got dill, we've got some thyme, we've got sage, parsley, cilantro, and if you look right off into the distance at that big monster tower over there, that's tomatillas.
Tomatillas. Well, what else might you be planning on growing?
We're going to use this to sell retail. So we're going to start with herbs, and we're going to learn the environment. But we're going to switch to lettuces, pickles. We'd like to do a fantastic cucumber farm up here and start pickling our own cucumbers. And you play around with that a little bit. The pretty part about what we're doing up here, anything is possible, and we're writing the rule book. So,
is this going to be a pick your own?
No, we're going to harvest it. I think the best thing, you know, funny story, we opened this up to some of the chefs, and they cleared it out in a matter of days. They thought it was their own personal garden. So, no, we're not going to go in that direction. We're going to pick it, and we're going to grow it downstairs, and we're going to educate the customer that you've got traceability, you've got local, and it's right here in New Orleans.
So will New Orleanians, will visitors be able to access this rooftop garden and visit it?
Without a doubt. We want this to be an important part of the community. We want our customers and any visitors to be educated. In fact, we have a partnership with the International High School, and I met with the dean, and we selected a culinary-type student, and we're going to train this culinary student for this semester how to grow, and if he wants to take it back to his country, he can do that. If not, next semester we'll grab another individual and educate them too. So this is an education program as well as a retail program.
Well, this is such a fascinating system. Where did these actually come from? Who's the company behind this?
The towers came from and were managed by a company called AMPS. And they're a startup company here in New Orleans. We used some local people to help us with this. We did a lot of research, and we found there were some national companies, bigger companies out there. But we wanted this to be grassroots. We wanted this to be a New Orleans project. We wanted to learn the goods, the bads, and the uglies. So Doug Jacobs is the partner that I'm working with on this. He's the guy with the green thumb. He's teaching me, and I'm teaching him the grocery side of it. But together, we're putting up something really, really pretty.
What does that stand for? That must be an acronym, AMPS.
Aquaponics Modular Systems.
And I understand that there's a university tie-in?
There is. He was part of the Idea Village, and this is his future. This is where he wants to go. So, yeah, he's a young student at Tulane and a fantastic guy to work with, very receptive to having to teach me the world of aeroponics and me teaching him grocery ponics.
Luckily, during our visit, the founders of AMPS, Doug Jacobs, and his partner, Kevin Morgan Rothschild, were also there overseeing construction.
So I'm Doug Jacobs. I'm the founder of Aquaponic Modular Production Systems, AMPS. And what we do is we design and build aquaponic and hydroponic farms for community groups, grocery stores, urban farmers. And, well, what we do is we build farms that grow food using less resources, less water, less land, and have a better environmental impact.
So it's a highly sustainable system then?
Yeah. We use one-tenth the water, the land, and we grow food at twice as fast without soil.
That's incredible. And tell me, Kevin, what's your role in this?
Well, I help out with the ongoing farm management. I help him set up the farms. I help help out our website and get us future clients. And
what is your website?
Our website is ampsnola.com. That's ampsnola.com.
And how did you come across this idea? How did this get started, really?
This was something I wanted to do for a long time. I wanted to help teach people to grow food locally using sustainable methods. I went to a place in Disney called The Land, and I saw them growing food without soil, using fish waste, growing fish and plants in the same environment, and I was like, wow, this is the future. This is how we're going to grow food for the growing population using our limited resources. And I walked into a social entrepreneurship conference at Tulane. I pitched the idea. I got resources from Tulane's Changemaker Institute. I got into the Idea Village, got resources from the Idea Village, and now we're going to do Social Entrepreneurship New Orleans, and they're going to help us refine our business plan and grow this business.
So the greening of urban local spaces across the country is a big happening thing. It's even happening in cold places like Chicago and Detroit. Sometimes the factors are ecological. Sometimes they're trying to revive a vacant neighborhood. What was really the motivation here?
Well, as a chef, I wanted to have the freshest, most local product available. We've got a roof. We're not using it for anything other than parking, and this was the perfect spot to put a vertical garden. It doesn't use a lot of space. You don't need an acre. That was really the inspiration, really wanting to put on the plate fresh product that's grown locally. We had the opportunity to have about 15 chefs up here last week, and Poppy, I got to tell you, when they came up to the roof, I wanted to show it off a little bit. So we're tying in the grocery store relationship with the farm-to-table relationship that we've got with our chefs, and we made fresh margarita pizzas with the basil yesterday in 20 steps or less.
Well, do you know of any other downtown businesses that are greening their outdoor spaces, or any other grocery stores, any place that are doing anything like this?
I'm only familiar with one other grocer, not in the state, and they're doing a hydroponics method. It's on a much smaller scale, and it's inside their store, but kudos to them for starting it. That's the way to go. And then Johnny over at Ye College Inn has a beautiful place on Carrollton. His is growing in the ground, but you know, he was actually one of the chefs up here and fell in love with it as well. So I'm hoping this encourages everybody to start something.
Yeah, I think you need some chickens and rabbits up here, Jack. That's what I think comes next. You know where your food comes from.
I'm happy to bring the chickens. I'd love to bring the chickens.
Any other plans for any other Rouses to start rooftop gardens?
Well, I'll speculate for you a little bit, but there has been some discussion with the success of this one so far that we would look at aquaponics, and that's the relationship between either fish or softshell crabs that we would use to grow plants and then harvest the fish as well. So we're truly trying to grow into a sustainable program. We've got 5 stores that have about an acre worth of rooftop space, so the sky's the limit for us right now. We really can grow this into something that not only the city can be proud of, but the nation could be proud of as well.
This is just incredibly exciting. So big kudos to you and Rouses for getting this rolling. Thank you so much for giving us the preview.
Thank you. Happy to have you. Please come back and try some of the product.
Culinary Director Jack Truding in a dream of a rooftop garden at the Rouses Market in downtown New Orleans.
The artist's palette of Terrence Osborne is as vividly delectable and diverse as Louisiana itself. You may have perused his art at previous Jazz and Heritage festivals, but this year, Terrence is the artist of the official, highly sought-after annual poster. Terrence, thank you for welcoming us into your home studio.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for having me, Poppy. I appreciate it.
So tell me, how many years have you been involved at the festival?
Well, I think this is about my 12th year.
Oh, my
11th,
gosh.
Maybe.
That's a long time.
Yeah, yeah. I've been around for a while.
So you must have been very young when you started doing the festival.
Oh, yeah. I was a baby. I mean, I think, I was in college when I started doing the festival. I would go and see Richard Thomas, who's a local artist here. And I loved the way he sold his artwork and the way he was in the media. And I wanted that.
So he's your inspiration.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Yeah.
He's part of your inspiration.
Yeah, he's one of the vets over there. He's been at it 30 years plus.
And what's the experience of the festival like for you?
Well, it's almost like a big reunion. Every year, some of the same faces come around and then some new faces, but it's just a big party. Everybody's feeling good and sharing and...
And you're always located in the same place on the fairgrounds, aren't you?
Usually, yeah.
So where can we find you then?
In Congo Square.
Ah, yes. Yeah. So you've done the Congo Square Festival posters previously. Mm-hmm. What years did you do those?
Well, the Congo Square poster I did in 07 and 2010. There's a little bit of a gap between the posters and years, but they are the only Jazz Fest posters that are a series, because if you connect the two posters, there's a house that continues on to the next one. So it's great.
That was a great idea. Mm-hmm. Well, everybody who goes to the festival knows that the food at the festival itself is an art. And
since you are a festival artist, you practically live there during the 7 days the festival's going on.
Oh, yeah.
So what's the first thing you eat?
The first thing I eat is the mango freeze.
You love that one.
Gotta have a mango freeze. I mean, we probably have, between my wife and I, we have about 10 each before the festival's over.
And what else? What else sustains you during festival?
The crawfish bread is amazing. There's somebody who sells it who is just the best. I mean, you know it when you have it. Plantains.
Oh, yeah.
Those are wonderful.
And the Jamma Jamma. You can't eat the plantains without the Jamma Jamma.
Of course, of course.
But tell me, what inspires your art?
Well, color, definitely. There's really two different inspirations for me. One, it has to do with the content, and that's more of something that I was born into. You know, before I realized what New Orleans was, I was already expressing the culture. And I think that's true for a lot of locals here who are talented and project that. You're born into it, and then eventually you get around to expressing it and then realizing it and then appreciating it because you've been in it the whole time. I think the other thing is the color. We're vibrant and energetic and eccentric people, and we love our culture, and the color is a great expression of it. You know, we're not afraid to paint our houses purple and green or pink and brown. It's easy to find it anywhere in the city. So I don't know, it just feels kind of natural to use any color.
So Terrence, as steeped in New Orleans culture as you were growing up, did you have to leave New Orleans to get perspective on that?
Well, I had a little bit of understanding of the culture pre-Katrina, but leaving the city gave me an entirely different perspective. We moved to Georgia. So we stayed in Georgia for almost 3 years, I believe.
3 years?
Almost, yeah. And yeah, that was a long time. And I almost got settled. Because in Georgia, we stayed in an area where the trees changed. You know, you don't see that in the city. Mm-hmm. And so when I came back to the city, I realized what I missed. And the people, you know, how everybody talks to you in New Orleans. We have a sense that everybody's family. Like, you know somebody through somebody else, you know. And so that I think that's why we talk to each other so freely here. You don't get that in most other places.
What drew you back?
Well, that's what drew me back. I missed that. You know, I realized that I'd hardened up. And when I came back, I was reminded of how I am supposed to be. So that was like the deciding factor. We had to come back.
Well, We're all really glad that you did. Now, we met each other last fall at a food event. And one of the thoughts that you shared with me is that in your paint colors, you see food sometimes and correlations to that. Would you talk to me about that?
Sure. A culinary artist, when they make their meal, mix all of these different foods or ingredients, and then they play around with temperatures and stuff to get the food to do what they want to do. I do the same thing with my artwork. When I'm mixing my paint, I know where I want to go with my color, and eventually I create something that is visually appealing, and it has the same visual appeal that food has. It almost looks edible when I'm done.
Well, let's talk about your coffee-inspired artwork.
Sure, sure. Well, French Market Coffee and Gallery Osborne partnered to come up with a poster to promote their new image. So I thought, okay, I'm a coffee tea drinker. It's easy. And what I did was I made a cup of coffee at the base of this vertical piece, and there's steam rising up all the way to the top. And in the steam, it reveals the whole city. There's icons, like iconic images like the St. Louis Cathedral, a guy with an umbrella doing the second line dance, the streetcar, a magnolia, and a whole bunch of other symbols. And
a crawfish. There's crawfish, a crawfish
yeah,
in there.
There's a crawfish, yeah. And a crawfish coming out of coffee, right?
Why not?
You know, it makes sense.
Doing this year's Jazz Fest poster is really a huge landmark occasion. Mm-hmm. What inspired that work? And talk to us about this year's poster.
Sure. Well, this year's poster is called Porch Song, and the artist that I've painted is Trombone Shorty. Everybody knows about Trombone Shorty's success. You know, he's a young guy. I believe he's like 25. We're 10 years apart.
Yeah.
He's traveling all over the world. So this is his time to get recognized. Grew up right in Treme, and so did I. So when I painted the poster, it was easy to paint Shorty because I knew I wanted to put him in the Treme neighborhood. Now, it's a generic Treme neighborhood. There are no streets that are recognizable. But while Shorty is blowing his horn, the neighborhood is bending to his note.
Ah.
And so that's the whole feel. The buildings look kind of warped. So he's on a porch. There's also a little T and S with a heart around it right on the bricks on the porch that I usually will throw something in there that is personal to me. So Terrence and Stephanie.
Oh, it's like a little love letter.
Yeah, yeah.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, it's fun.
So how do you want people to view your art? What do you want your art to mean to people?
Well, I want people to look at my art and be overwhelmed. I like to throw colors together that feel good to me. So when I'm done with my piece, I want my spectator to look at it without me even being there and feel what I felt while I was working on it. To me, that exchange is priceless.
Well, I am a big fan, and it was really thrilling to have this opportunity to find the artist in his studio at home. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me, Poppy. I appreciate it.
Terrence Osborne, creator of this year's Jazz and Heritage Festival poster. After the next short break, Chef Aaron McCargo takes us along on his amazing life's voyage. We'll learn the twists and turns that transformed him from prison inmate to Food Network star. I'm Poppy Tooker, and you're listening to Louisiana Eats, edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Louisiana Eats is made possible with major support from Rouse's Markets. Winner of Season 4's Next Food Network star, Chef Aaron McCargo, has indeed become a star with his own very popular show, Big Daddy's House. Now he's traveling the country, teaching dialysis patients how to tailor their menus to their new lifestyles. Aaron, welcome to Louisiana Eats.
Oh, thank you for having me. This is so cool.
Well, it's been 4 years since you were named Food Network's next star. Tell us how your life has changed.
Honestly, it's been a blessing from God to just be doing what I'm doing. You know, I never anticipated my life being about TV and traveling. I always loved just being in the kitchen, being to myself in the zone. And really, it hasn't changed much, but just a couple of people know me now.
Tell me, why did you call the show Big Daddy's House?
Well, it was one of those things that it was based around the fact that I'm a father. I have a deep voice for some reason, and I ate big, and I snored loud, and everything was big about me, and they were like, okay, Big Daddy's house.
So what were your personal goals with the show? What are you trying to accomplish with your audience?
Well, really, it's just let them know, like, to take the stress out of cooking. I mean, no diss to any of the other chefs doing their own thing, but people want to get in the kitchen, and food is becoming one of those things that people are embracing more and more, but it's sometimes too complicated. And I wanted to let people know, like, get in the kitchen with your kids, get in the kitchen with your friends, have a good time with your brother like I do on the show, and and just take good food and keep it simple and simplify, but have it full of flavor.
Aaron, I know that it certainly all didn't begin for you with the Next Food Network Star Competition. Tell us how and when food became a great passion in your life.
Well, it had to be like around, I want to say four was the Easy Bake Oven days, which we're not going to talk about.
Easy Bake Oven, yes we are. No. Now, usually that's a girl's gift.
I have a feminine side. Well, really, it was one of those things. Me and my brothers and sisters would be in a room on punishment for something. We would be out of cake mix, and I would just take whatever we can find, you know, and just bake something out of it. And punishment became a blessing then. We're like, okay, we got to get in trouble till the bulb blew. And then we realized that you can't put a 60 watt in the Easy Bake Oven. It just doesn't work. And so I had to move up. And then my father really encouraged me. He saw me taking an interest by looking at Betty Crocker cookbooks and watching Julia Child and Jacques Pepin and those guys on TV. And he was like, you know what? You're going to be a chef. And I had no idea what the word meant. I just knew I loved to eat. I loved food, the smell, everything about it just excited me and calmed me down. And I just pursued it.
So your first job, McDonald's?
No, my first job was a volunteer job when I was 13.
Okay.
At Cooper Hospital in Camden, New Jersey.
So you were in the medical world even then?
Yes.
At 13?
Yeah. 13. It took me forever to get in. I had to have so many papers signed by my parents in the school. And it was the only way I can be next to food. And my mother told me one summer, you're not going to sit around the house. And she's like, be a candy striper. I'm like, oh, no, I'm not wearing a red and white shirt.
Mom, really, I had enough with the Easy Bake Oven.
She was trying to convert me into something. I don't know. I was like, Mom, no. And I actually had a chance to get into the dietary department. You know, it was just peeling onions and making Salisbury steaks. And then I learned how to make roux and soups and sauces. And I was just like, wow, this is cool. And it just kept evolving and taking off from there.
Well, Aaron, now your life has taken a whole new direction from the life of the television star. Mm-hmm. Now that you're back working in medical, sort of, mm-hmm. with Fresenius Medical Care. And would you talk to us about your work with them? What are you doing?
The partnership between me and Fresenius Medical Care is very unique because, you know, it's all about giving the patients on dialysis a better lifestyle, like letting them know, like, this is a new life, a new you in 2012 and for many years to come. And I'm here to help work out that part of your daily routine, which is the food aspect of it, and help you understand that you can have fun in the kitchen. You can make delicious, creative meals without stressing, without all those gadgets, without breaking the bank. Without feeling like your hands are tied, you know, because I've had the opportunity to travel to some of the facilities and I see what the patients are doing. I get their voice on, hey, you know what? You know, if we can only make things that are easy, if, you know, after the treatments, I'm tired, all the recipes say what I can't have, but I want something I can have that I can make easy. And I'm like, okay, ding, you got me.
What was the genesis of this? Why dialysis patients?
Well, I have a sister-in-law that's on dialysis and a buddy of mine, one of my close friends, his father's on dialysis and he's dealing with kidney failure. So it's very close to home, you know, and I never experienced the downfall of being on dialysis from a food aspect until they started to tell me, like, you know, I can't eat this, I can't eat that.
What are some of the dietary challenges that face these people with chronic kidney disease?
Well, they can't have anything with phosphorus or potassium, like the oranges, the broccoli, tomatoes, beans, a lot of liquid, a lot of the things that we take for granted that we can have in our diet, they can't. And so when you look at that and you say, well, these are all the right things for you. But
yeah, I'm
not
so
for
surprised
dialysis patients.
By that.
Yes. And that's the complicated part because you got to cut out the fat in a certain type of meat you buy and certain beans and nuts. Limited amount of butter, you know, salt, a definite no-no.
Yeah.
Tomatoes, no tomatoes.
And broccoli?
No oranges.
I mean, my goodness, I thought that was like the original healthy food. Eat your broccoli. It must be so confusing.
Yes, and a lot of them really want to do the right thing. Sometimes the recipes are too complicated.
Well, can you give us some simple guidelines and tips to help people with this condition and their caretakers?
Absolutely. I would say first, really find out what is good for your diet. Secondly, to know the things you can have. Like, you can have tons of protein. So make sure you get the leanest protein you can have, like the pork tenderloins and the pork loin. And when you're buying ground beef, get like the 93%, the, yeah, you know, 90%. Go ahead and get that fish that you like and
but
the shrimp.
Then, on the other hand, I saw you cooking one of these recipes, and I was surprised by your use of cream and blue cheese.
You've been watching me, haven't you?
Yeah.
And that's the thing. Once you get to know what you can have and the amounts, that's my job to make it creative. I can have blue cheese. I can have tarragon. I can have a little bit of cream to make a nice sauce. And it was very simple. So when you're taking out the salt, put in some of the zest, put in some of the, like a little pop of vinegar, a little splash of lemon juice. You don't want to overdo it because you can't have a lot of liquid in your diet.
So lemons are okay.
Very
and
little.
And oranges are not?
The lemon zest is okay.
Okay.
But not too much of the juice. And oranges are definitely a no-no.
It's a very isolating disease, isn't it?
Yes, exactly. And you know what? It's not so much just the patients. This can help the families. And if you start eating this way, this will help eliminate that hopefully for you in the future and for your kids. So getting in the kitchen and you're making a crunchy lemon herb crusted chicken and having the kids be a part of, like, even if it's breading the chicken tenders while someone's picking the herbs and someone's zesting the lemon and just working together, you know, bringing that family time back to the table, back to the environment of the household and letting the patient know, like, you're not alone. Because we tend to sometimes be selfish. We're going in, we make us a dinner, and then you're left to make up your own recipe for your diet. But let's get everybody on the same page, and we can all have the same thing.
Well, with all of the exposure you're having to dialysis patients all over the country, for those listeners who might not have had any of this experience in their lives, could you describe for us a little bit about what these people go through?
It's something that you have to see. It's a 3 or 4 hour transfusion, and they're doing this for 3-4 times a week, and some of them are on this machine for up to 8 hours.
Oh.
And you're just there by yourself during the transfusion, and then you're free to go home and live life. And when you think free, yeah, I can go back, but no, you still have to follow all the regimens that were set according to your diet plan, you know, and according to your lifestyle. So it's not as easy and cut and dry as you think. It's not like going and you get in the needle and you go home. No, you have to sit in a facility or they come to your home and they do this transfusion. And it's a lot of hours out of a week. It's like almost a job to stay alive. And I think that the last thing you want to do is worry about what you want to eat.
Here's another crazy question that comes to my mind. One of the linchpins of Louisiana cooking is what we call a Creole sauce.
Mm-hmm.
That's tomato-based, so no tomato sauce either, huh?
No, but we can drop out that tomato sauce, do more of a gumbo-style sauce.
Mm-hmm.
That's when I let the patients know, like, bring in the cayenne pepper, the spicy smoked paprika, the chili peppers or crushed red pepper flakes, the hot chili powder. So you can still have that heat because it's something that's embedded in you, and you don't have to give it up. But you don't have to add the salt to have that. And that's what a lot of those hot sauces and things have, is the salt that makes it unhealthy for your diet.
Well, Aaron, thank you so much for sharing your gifts with the world and with all the listeners on Louisiana Eats.
And thank you for having me. I really enjoy you.
Food Network star Big Daddy Aaron McCargo Jr. and his inspiring new work with chronic kidney disease patients. That's it for this week's edition of Louisiana Eats, edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Next week, we'll ring in the new year with Hoppin' John Taylor.
It always cracks me up when you start talking about frying because people will say these truly uninformed things, such as, oh, I can't eat those French fries because I've got a problem with my cholesterol. No, wait a second. Okay, you've got a problem with cholesterol. Never mind that they've never proved that ingested cholesterol has a thing to do with serum cholesterol. If you're really worried about your cholesterol, you better choose your grandparents. I mean, that's it's the truth. It's the truth.
Subscribe to our podcast, hear today's show, or catch up on previous editions anytime online at wwno.org. Louisiana Eats is made possible with major support from Popeye's Louisiana Kitchen, Rouse's Markets, and Zatarain's. Additional support provided by Dickie Brennan and Company, Lightseekin Funeral Homes, and our media sponsor, Louisiana Kitchen and Culture Magazine. Theme music by Johnny Sketch and the Dirty Notes, produced at Piety Street Recording. Thanks to producer and sound engineer Thomas Walsh and our editor, Zoe Sullivan.
I'm Poppy Tooker. We'll see you next time. Louisiana Eats is a production of WWNO.